Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have a couple of stories about healthcare and a look into preschool funding. It's Thursday, September 5th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Enjoying these hot, late summer days? If so, soak it in while you can. Fall-like weather is fast approaching. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
A big, fat, high-pressure system that's parked itself over Montana is responsible for this unseasonably hot weather.
We're riding about 10 to 15 degrees above normal for this time of year.
Bob Nestor is senior forecaster at the National Weather Service Bureau in Missoula.
We actually haven't seen many of these ridges most of the summer, but it happens.
Nestor says Montana has one more day of unusually hot, dry, late summer conditions before a major and long-term change in the weather moves in Friday.
Should be unstable enough to have widespread showers and some thunderstorms. Up to a tenth of an inch, perhaps some local areas could see half an inch rain on Friday.
Saturday is shaping up to be a lovely day with clear skies and highs in the upper 70s to lower 80s. Enjoy it because beginning Sunday, a low pressure system will begin slowly rolling across the entire northern Rockies, resulting in widespread showers. Rainfall totals early next week will range from a quarter of an inch to over an inch in the mountains. Monday's temps may struggle to climb out of the 60s. Again, meteorologist Bob Nestor.
We'll probably be in the lower to mid 70s by the end of next week, but we are not expecting a return to strong high pressure with warmer than normal temperatures.
In other words, goodbye to these hot summer days and hello to autumn-like weather. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
For over a year, a grassroots group in Butte has been asking for proof that the final Superfund cleanup plan for the mining city won't inhibit their dream of a free-flowing Silver Bow Creek in the future. The group repeatedly requested funding to evaluate whether their vision is possible. Yesterday, the Restore Our Creek Coalition received some good news. EPA announced they will provide $50,000 to study the feasibility of restoring that portion of the creek running through town. The money will be awarded to the local Citizens Technical Environmental Committee, which translates Superfund issues to the public in the form of a technical assistance grant. Members of Montana's congressional delegation have pressured EPA leaders to respond to the Restore Our Creek Coalition and lauded this as a step in the right direction. Rural areas across the United States struggle to find and keep doctors. In Montana, rural residency programs aim to fix that problem by training new doctors away from city centers. Kayla DeRoche reports hospitals will be able to access federal funding for rural physician training starting in October.
While about 20% of Americans live in rural areas, rural doctors made up only 10% of the total number of working physicians in the country in 2006. That's according to the American Academy of Family Physicians website. While AAFP says there's still a hiring gap in rural America, it suggests that training residents in rural settings could contribute to a solution. It also finds that doctors who grew up in rural areas are more likely to return to work there. That's true for Billings Clinic third-year internal medicine resident Amy Conson from Colstrip.
I think it's a mindset. So I'm born and raised in a small community, and so that's where my passion lies. And I think a lot of people come to the Billings Clinic program because we're interested in rural medicine, and that's one of the driving factors for us to come.
Conson is part of the second round of internal medicine residents at Billings Clinic. A few years ago, Billings Clinic started sending those residents to Lewistown, Montana, and Sheridan, Wyoming. There, they do month-long rotations at critical access hospitals, rural hospitals with fewer than 25 inpatient beds. There are 48 of these hospitals in Montana. Conson says while smaller medical centers have fewer resources, that also forces residents to be more resourceful.
We are learning how to be self-reliant, if you will, and so learning how to deal with these problems that we don't learn so much here at Billings Clinic because we do have so much access to specialists.
Family doctor and professor Mark Deutschman runs a rural track at the University of Colorado School of Medicine and agrees with that perspective.
You have to be interested and even excited about seeing patients who come in with anything and everything.
Deutschman identifies medical students who want this type of rural practice and supports them through their training. And he says those who do choose a rural residency are more likely to return.
Not every town is going to absorb every one of their graduates. That's not the idea. The idea is that you train them and then they go on to other rural sites.
A 2012 analysis from the federally funded Rural Health Information Hub found that somewhere between 50 and 70% of rural program residents return to a rural area soon after graduation. They report that's 2 to 3 times higher than rural placements following family medicine residencies. So rural residency programs are filling an ongoing need to attract and keep physicians. Deutschman says not all these programs use Medicare funding, but most do. Now that includes Billings Clinic. A recent rule change will allow Medicare to subsidize physician training in critical access hospitals. That's funding Montana Democratic Senator John Tester has advocated for.
The rural residencies issue is not just a Montana issue, although Montana is a very rural state. It's an issue throughout the country, so I think this is going to help get doctors into rural America across the board.
Billings Clinic previously relied on multi-year, multi-million dollar funding from the Helmsley Charitable Trust to send residents like Compton out to these different communities. Other Montana-based medical programs that offer rural training include Riverstone Health and the Family Medicine Residency of Western Montana. The rule change goes into effect October 1st. Kayla Giroux, YPR News.
A virtual network of patient medical records is under construction by state officials and a newly formed organization in Montana's healthcare industry. Governor Steve Bullock announced yesterday $19 million in federal funding is backing the developing information exchange. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Big Sky Care Connect is Montana's latest attempt to link healthcare providers so they can more efficiently share patient medical information. Jonathan Griffin, Chief Medical Innovation Officer at St. Pete's Health in Helena, says medical records are not kept the same way by all healthcare providers, and that can make treatment decisions difficult.
If I'm taking care of a patient in a nursing home, it's not okay for me to have 3 or 4 different record systems up in front of me at one time to try to piece together the history of a very sick person who needs me to be making the best, most informed decisions possible.
Griffin says Big Sky Care Connect will be a bridge that links pharmacies, urgent care clinics, nursing homes, hospitals, and other providers so they can all share patient data. The idea is that this will lead to better coordination between healthcare providers and eliminate redundant tests and procedures resulting in lower healthcare costs. Griffin sits on the Medical Information Network's board of directors, which is predominantly made up of healthcare executives from across the state. Many of the board members gathered at St. Pete's for a press conference Wednesday, announcing the latest step in the system's development. Through an executive order, Governor Bullock designated Big Sky Care Connect as Montana's single healthcare information network.
Montanans can soon look forward to a complete transformation in the way that care is delivered.
The $19 million from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to help with the system's startup cost must be matched with 10% of the cost from the state or private funds. This is not Montana's first attempt at creating a statewide network to share patient data.
It's the second attempt. I think it's probably the right attempt.
Bob Janicek is the Vice President of Network Operations at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana. In the mid-2000s, Montana health industry officials envisioned a similar kind of information exchange to pass medical data from provider to provider. However, that program, HealthShare Montana, failed to get off the ground. Janicek says back then the technology to create the system wasn't fully developed, and he says there were funding disagreements between healthcare providers who couldn't agree on how to use what he described as a Frankenstein system. The board of directors of Big Sky Care Connect says it will cost $50 million over 4 years to connect every physician in the state to the system, and participation isn't mandatory. Mark Lasseau is the chief technical officer at Quality Health Network in Colorado. QHN runs a health information exchange between 14 hospitals and much of the medical providers and health organizations in western Colorado. Lasseau says the success of these kinds of medical record sharing platforms is now less about technological gaps and more about getting people to work together.
It's an awful lot and more about the people, the relationships, and getting people to understand what it is they're trying to achieve and how they want to share information with each other effectively and securely.
He says to start a large data sharing network, in this case containing patient medical history, it helps to have a few big hospitals or providers join first.
The more information in the network, the more value it has to all providers. And that really helps with the growth.
Big Sky Care Connect is scheduled to begin signing up providers to join its network of patient data later this year. Officials with the new nonprofit say the organization expects to hire a vendor to run the data network this month. I'm Corin Cates-Carney, Montana Public Radio.
Montana is one of a handful of states that doesn't publicly fund preschool. The last legislative session rejected two bills that tried to change this shortly before the state's preschool pilot project ended. Rachel Kramer reports what this means for some of the preschool providers and parents who are left scrambling.
On a Wednesday morning at Eastgate Elementary School in East Helena, kids spill out of their classrooms and go outside for morning recess. Kate Johnson is a kindergarten teacher.
This looks like such a fun classroom. Lots of Legos. Is that some kind of terrarium back there?
Yeah, that's our bug house. We bring bugs off the playground and just keep them in there, like grasshoppers and moths right now. So we found a roly-poly today.
Last year, Johnson taught preschool through the state-funded STARS preschool program. The two-year pilot project served 300 4- and 5-year-olds in 21 classrooms across the state. Another 300 kids were turned away or put on a wait list.
What we have seen in the years that we've run a pre-K is the confidence the child has going into kindergarten. They go into kindergarten just ready, just knowing that they can do it, knowing that they know some of the letters, how to act at school. So we really are happy with how the program has fostered a lot of confidence and just social-emotional learning.
A state report showed a 21% overall increase in kindergarten readiness for kids who participated in STARS preschool. And a large body of research shows that readiness affects third grade reading levels and graduation rates. But the pilot project ended this summer, and bills proposing public funding for preschool didn't pass the 2019 Montana legislative session. So a lot of the participants in STARS have had to cut back their services. Eastgate Principal Jill Miller says she's advocated for publicly funded preschool at several legislative sessions.
When people speak against pre-K, the argument is that it's not the school's job or it's not the government's job to provide daycare. While I understand that narrow-minded thinking to a degree, as an educator, I look at what are these kids doing instead if they're not in school receiving high-quality education.
Miller says a lot of families in East Helena can't afford high-quality daycare or private preschool. Head Start has a waiting list, and half of the students in school qualify for free or reduced meals.
We've got the facility, we've got the staff to do it, but we still need the money to be able to do it.
About 5 years ago, Eastgate used a local grant to start an age exception kindergarten program called Kinder Cub. It enrolls 4-year-olds as kindergartners to receive state funding while giving kids the skills they need to be successful in school. But Kinder Cub only has 18 seats per year, and it's intended to serve kids who meet federal guidelines for free or reduced meals, are English learners registered with a tribe, or qualify for special education services. STARS funding allowed them to open a second classroom to kids who didn't meet those criteria and hire more staff like Kate Johnson. When the pilot project ended, Eastgate had to cut back on that second classroom, and Kate shifted into a position with Kinder Cub. Is there hope that there could be public funding with the next legislative session, or?
Always hope. And hope burns eternal, as the saying goes.
About 100 miles southeast of Eastgate is Human Resource Development Council, a nonprofit Bozeman-based organization. Its early childhood education program serves over 183 to 5-year-olds in Bozeman, Belgrade, and Livingston. HRDC's Associate Director Sarah Savage says the program didn't participate in STARS, but state funding would help it expand its services. She says affordable, high-quality child care and education is a pressing need.
And it's not just those families that qualify based on income that we know have a growing need. It's really all families in our community that are struggling.
HRDC serves kids through Head Start scholarships and tuition spots starting at $575 a month for full-day preschool.
When you compare that to some local programs in our community where parents are spending over $1,000 a month to send their children to care and education, it's a really affordable option at the same level of quality.
Savage says she regularly interacts with parents who are in a panic, trying to decide whether to pay for childcare or stay at home. She says some parents will even try to plan their conception around the availability of care, which can have a 2-year waiting list.
I also am having this conversation with my staff. I have so many bright, capable individuals who are working for me, who are in a phase of their life where they're starting families, and they're not able to find care for their children. And so they're not able to return to the workforce.
Savage says this can have a big economic and social impact on a community. Early childhood care and education was identified as a challenge in HRDC's last community needs assessment in 2017. Now the organization is embarking on another to help direct what projects it works on for the next 3 years. The first town hall will be September 23rd in Belgrade at the Public Library. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.